All right, Alexandra, let's talk about two coups. Supposedly two coups, maybe two coups, two coup attempts. We have a coup attempt, kind of, sort of, in Jordan. And we have a coup attempt, and I say that, you know, very lightly, a light coup attempt, possible coup attempt in Turkey. Of course, there's a lot to the Turkey one, which is kind of interesting. But the Jordan one is also interesting. So let's tackle Jordan first, because I think it's a little bit quicker. Because the Turkey one, there was actually an interesting video of Van der Leyen and Michelle in Turkey as well, meeting with Erdogan, which was really kind of funny as well. But let's go into Jordan first. What's going on?
Well, there's been a power struggle of some kind within the royal court, the royal family. Jordan, like most Arab countries, is a monarchy, and the ruler of Jordan is King Abdullah, and he's just ousted his half-brother, Hamza, from the position of crown prince. So essentially, he's done that, and there's been justification that Hamza, Sharif Hassan, another member of the royal family, and Bassem Awadullah, the former senior official in the royal court, were involved in some kind of sedition, and that there are apparently investigations which supposedly or allegedly monitored interference and communication with foreign parties over the right timing to destabilize Jordan. I take none of this extreme particularly seriously. It looks to me as if King Abdullah, who is the monarch of Jordan, is acting to remove somebody within the royal family that stands in the line of succession of whomever it is that he has decided he wants to put in his place and to succeed him when he himself departs the scene. This kind of thing has happened before in Jordan. It happened about 20 years ago when the then King of Jordan, King Hussein, sidelined his brother, King Crown Prince Hassan, in order to make his son Abdullah next in line to the throne, and indeed Abdullah eventually succeeded. And it seems to me Abdullah is doing the same. So I don't think there is, in fact, a coup in Jordan. I think this talk of a coup, as you rightly said, is overstated. It looks to me as if Jordan is entirely stable, and I don't really get the sense that anything is going on outside some intrigues within the royal court. Of course, I could be wrong. It's never easy to say in situations like this, when you're talking about monarchies, where there's court intrigues, it's all very medieval and rather difficult to read for outsiders. But that's my best guess anyway.
Yeah, looks like family intrigue and kind of setting things up for the next generation of rulers. But let's shift gears now. Indeed. Interesting story nonetheless, and we'll be watching. But I agree with you. I think Abdullah is very safe where he is right now. And his line of succession seems like it's going to be safeguarded.
Absolutely. I mean, he looks completely secure. I can't imagine there's any real challenge to him. It looks to me like a succession battle. And Abdullah has acted to contain it. There is some suggestions, by the way, that these people who've just been sort of sidelined and ousted had some kind of contact with the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, which has been taking a more stronger line in foreign policy recently. But until we have more information about that, it's very difficult to draw any conclusions. I don't think there's any real threat to Jordan or to the stability of Jordan or to King Abdullah's position.
All right. So we switch gears to Erdogan, and we have another coup attempt in Turkey. And I say that because in 2016, when we really did have a coup attempt in Turkey, which failed, we've had a lot of smaller incidences that Erdogan has, I don't want to say provoked, maybe he's imagined, maybe he's kind of made up. Whenever he gets into a bind, we get these little mini coups, and he arrests some people, and the press jumps onto all of this stuff, and it's been a very good diversion tactic that he's used over the past couple of years, especially when the economy has tanked like it's tanking right now. And so as the economy is tanking, as the lira is imploding and collapsing, we have another, in his eyes, in the Erdogan government's eyes, an attempted coup. And this comes because of admirals, actually 100 admirals, had signed the document. And they took issues. These are actually retired admirals, to be more specific. They took an issue with the fact that the parliament in Turkey has approved the building and the necessary budget for what's going to be dubbed the Istanbul Canal, which is going to be something like the Panama Canal, the Suez Canal. And the reason they took issue with this is actually very, I mean, I read the statement. It's very logical what they're saying. And let me know if I get this right. What they're saying pretty much is that, look, we've been safeguarded by the Montreux Convention, the Montreux Doctrine, which allows the safe passage of ships from the Black Sea to the Mediterranean via the Bosphorus and then onwards into the Mediterranean. That's kind of safeguarded our position in the world. That's kept our neutrality, especially during World War II. It's kept Turkey, in essence, they feel it's kept Turkey in a neutral position when it comes to geopolitics and when it comes to wider conflicts. And they feel like the Istanbul Canal may actually jeopardize that neutrality. And so they're just urging caution. That's what it sounded like to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but they urge a little bit of caution with going ahead with an Istanbul Canal, which could be leveraged and may actually move Turkey away from being a neutral player and providing safe passage to passenger vessels and military vessels, to instead leveraging the passage from the Black Sea to the Mediterranean to maybe preferred partners and to certain countries, and blocking the passage to other countries. Anyway, it seemed very an interesting take by these admirals, but the Erdogan government said, no, this is an attempted coup. They arrested 10 retired admirals. They had another 4 people arrested, but they let them go back home. And so now you have this entire controversy, and I think it's being completely stoked by the Erdogan government, where they're saying we have another coup attempt against us. It seems to me like it's a diversion.
I completely agree with you. I think you are entirely right. First of all, what kind of a coup is it in which admirals, let's remember, they are retired admirals, hardly the sort of people who are in command of troops, write a polite letter expressing entirely legitimate and fully justified concerns about a canal like this? I mean, this isn't a coup attempt. It's people raising what is an important and serious issue. And by the way, I mean, I am actually somebody who knows quite a lot about the Montreux Convention. I once had to write a paper about it. I think their point is an entirely valid one. Whether it turns out the way they say, I'm not sure. But I think the points they're making are completely legitimate. What they're basically saying is this: it undermines the Montreux Convention because it makes it possible for warships, including aircraft carriers and such like, to travel conceivably into the Black Sea and out again in ways that the Black Sea powers were able to stop as a result of the Montreux Convention. And that had actually stabilised the situation around the Black Sea and had made Turkey's position much safer. And in fact, it meant that Turkey was no longer constantly in a situation where it was being battled over by the Western powers and Russia over control of the Straits. It's an entirely legitimate and fair point, and they fully justified in making it. And normally, it would provoke, in any democratic country, it would provoke discussion, it would provoke debate. But of course, Turkey is not a normal country. President Erdogan is not a normal person. He immediately seized on it to claim ludicrously that it's a coup attempt. He's had 10 of these people arrested. He's threatening others. He's taking wild observations about a coup. I don't think anybody in Turkey believes that. But as you rightly say, it distracts attention from the economic crisis that Turkey is facing. And of course, it sets the scene perfectly for this meeting, which you're absolutely right to bring up, with Ursula von der Leyen and the Europeans, in which he bilks the Europeans for money. saying, you know, I need it basically to deal with the refugee problem. And just look at how unstable the implicit suggestion is, the situation is becoming. And of course, if you don't have me there to keep control of everything, well, just imagine how bad the situation might become. I mean, this is the sort of game that Erdogan loves to play. And of course, the Europeans rolled over and agreed to everything he wanted.
Yeah, it gets even better. And we'll close it out on this news. So, the European head honchos, Michel and von der Leyen, they have this meeting with Erdogan, and of course they're going to lay down the law, Alexander, on human rights and rule of law. And, you know, this is typical EU fashion, right? They're going to go to Erdogan and lecture him on human rights and rule of law. And as they were finishing up their meeting, they were going to sit down and, meet the press and take their photo shoots and all these good things. they go to sit down, and sure enough, Erdogan, and people will see photos, Erdogan has two seats. He has the one that he's going to sit with in front of the Turkish flag. Then he has one seat next to him, which has the European Union flag. And Michel sits down over there. And von der Leyen just sits there looking at both of them, and she makes the most amazing sound. And this is going to be the meme for the ages. And she just goes, and all the mics catch her saying it. She puts her hands in the air because she has nowhere to sit. Erdogan doesn't give. He doesn't care. I was going to say he doesn't give, but you know what? He doesn't care. Michel is just, sliding back, feet up in the air. He doesn't care. And what do? They put von der Leyen far away on a sofa next to them. It was the snub of a century. And to me, it just shows that Erdogan doesn't give a crap, because the EU came there. They're going to lecture him on rule of law. They're going to lecture him on human rights. They also said they're going to talk about how he should treat Greece and Cyprus better. And he just didn't care. He snubbed von der Leyen, and he made her look like an absolute fool. And she's caught on a hot mic. Not even a hot mic. She's caught on a mic screeching, where's my seat? Pretty much is what she was saying. It was an absolute embarrassment, but it shows the games that Erdogan plays. And to me, it also, on a side note, being Cypriot and Greek, it also shows, God, Cyprus and Greece, you guys are really putting all your faith behind these two EU bozos. These are the people that you guys are banking on to help you deal with Turkey and with Erdogan. Von der Leyen and Michel, just take a look at how he treats them. And of course, they're going to give Turkey money, as you said. There you go.
Exactly. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it was a farcical, actually, it was a rather comic scene. And I have to say, at some level, I actually enjoyed it, because, I mean, when you see this kind of thing, when you see people as puffed up as Ursula von der Leyen are, being brought down with a thump, it's rather enjoyable. But at the same time, if these people had any self-respect, they wouldn't accept it. They'd say, sorry, Mr. President, where's my seat? You know, can you please get me a seat now? And if he doesn't provide it, well, we can't have a meeting then. We're going back to our hotel. You sort out some arrangements and then we'll come and talk. That's how self-respecting leaders behave. Of course, they don't, because they are, as you've so often, ultimately a bunch of clowns. They come along. They say they're going to lecture Erdogan. Erdogan puts them in a position of embarrassment and humiliation. And what do? They roll over and give him all the money that he's asking for, because they dare not cross the Sultan, because if they do, well, you never know, he might flood them with refugees all over again. And Angela back in Berlin wouldn't like that. So this is the farcical situation that you see set up here. And you're absolutely right. I mean, anybody in Athens and in Cyprus who doesn't draw the obvious conclusions from this is frankly delusional or foolish. Ultimately, you cannot rely on these people if you're dealing with someone like Erdogan. Here you see Erdogan asserting himself over the Europeans in the middle of an economic crisis where arguably he is in a vulnerable position, but he knows how to play them and humiliate them in that sort of way. And the Greeks and the Cypriots, instead of learning from that, they just go along with the Europeans all the time. They just rely on the Europeans to protect them from Erdogan, which, as we saw with Michel and Ursula von der Leyen, the Europeans are completely unable to do. They can't even stand up to Erdogan on a matter of their own self-respect. How are they ever going to be expected to stand up for Cyprus or Greece? They never will do that.
Two quick questions that are connected. I believe it was Erdogan's foreign minister, Cavusoglu, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who said in a statement, and I believe it was him, I may be wrong, but he said when they were talking about, you know, Turkey's rapprochement with the EU and having to find ways to work with the EU and perhaps even gaining entrance into the EU, I believe he said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, we don't really care because the EU is not going to exist in 5 years. So, you know, why should we pander to the EU? They're not even going to be around in 5 years. Going off of that statement, what do you, number one is, what do you make of a statement like that? I mean, obviously, watching the optics with Erdogan and van der Leyen and Michel, I think it's clear that Turkey believes in that type of, believes in that statement, and they're probably building a policy around that statement. What do you think of that? And connected to that, what should Greece and Cyprus do when having to engage with Turkey on a diplomatic front, or having to engage in the region on a diplomatic front? Because, you know, obviously the EU is not going to provide any level of protection at all. Obviously, they're not going to help Cyprus or Greece, even though they kind of posture that they will. And even when Greece has ventured off to create kind of bilateral agreements, say with France, they've completely flubbed that as well. They completely messed that up as well. Even when they've tried to go off a little bit on their own, they completely messed it up. So, I mean, what should they do? What would be the smart thing for them to do? And once again, I'm saying in a diplomatic way, I'm not talking conflict and stupidities like that. How should they engage the region in a workable, diplomatic, fruitful way for everyone's benefit? So, I mean, connected questions, but what do you think?
Absolutely. Well, and there are actually simple answers. Firstly, you're absolutely correct in thinking that the Turks, looking at the mess the EU has become, are no longer taking it seriously, and they're increasingly framing their foreign policy along the assumption that the EU is a busted flush, and in a couple of years it might not even exist. And that undoubtedly is the Turkish calculation. Whether that's right or that's wrong, that's a different matter. That is what the Turks think now, and that is what is governing their actions. As for the Greeks, they do need to understand that the EU is, as the Turks think, a busted flush. Depending on the EU is not going to work for them. And so what the Greeks need to do, it's perfectly simple. It's what the Greeks once did do, which is that they should conduct an active foreign policy. They need to talk firstly to the Americans, who are obviously the great superpower, which is still very much the dominant power in the Eastern Mediterranean. They need to talk to the Russians, who have an intimate relationship with Turkey, but who have strong sentimental feelings for Greece, and who have some influence, it seems, on Turkey. They need to find bilateral agreements with countries like France, and they also need to speak to the key Arab countries and the other big regional countries, Egypt, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and of course Iran, which is not an Arab country, but which is also a big regional power. In other words, Greece needs to pursue an active foreign policy that looks beyond the EU. The current Greek foreign policy, which deals 90% with the EU, 10% with the United States, and ignores everyone else, isn't working and will continue to fail. Greece needs to engage with its region, with all the important powers in the region. Obviously, that includes the United States, because the United States is a big presence in the region. Obviously, it includes countries like Italy and France, but it also means other countries. It means Russia, certainly, and it means Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, even perhaps Iran. And if you conduct diplomacy in that way, you start building up friends. Greece has had historically very good relations with Russia, historically very good relations with the Arab world. If it starts to cultivate those, well, it begins to look like an important regional power, which Turkey and Erdogan might begin to take seriously. I forgot to mention Israel, but Israel too. I mean, you know, the Greeks have a connection to Israel. They can talk to Israel also. So all of these powers, you can do it. You can pursue an active foreign policy in the region, and it might start to work. If you simply rely on Brussels, then you're simply condemning yourself for failure, because Brussels takes its orders from Berlin, and Berlin will always do exactly what Erdogan tells it.
Yeah, as we saw from the videos today, that Erdogan is
absolutely
he doesn't care. He does. He's exactly. Just give me the money. Exactly. Is pretty much what he's saying. Send me the check.
Exactly. Exactly. Send me the check. And of course, what do? They write it down. I mean, of course, however much money you want, sir, you know, what, 3 billion, 10 billion, whatever it is, we will give it to you. Just be a little bit more gentle with your Kurds. I mean, that's the sort of line that they seem to take. I mean, it's so sad. It's actually funny. I mean, it's just ridiculous to see, actually.
Yeah, it is. Sit down on the sofa over there, Ursula.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly.
All right, guys. I'll put a link for the Durant shop, 10% off all merch down below in the description box. Take care, everybody.